I'm Angela Sharp, missionary from Puerto Rico. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge from KFUO Radio.
You are listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today is a Sarah Goes to School Day.
It's been a minute since I did one of these, actually, I think.
Yeah, I thought you were finished with school, Sarah.
Yeah. Aren't you done with school?
What?
Never.
I didn't think I'd be a perpetual student because I wasn't a student for a long time, but now I'm turning into a perpetual student. But I'm not mad.
At least you keep learning new and interesting things. I've now been through biology, high school biology, 4 times.
Oh.
So
I mean, I liked high school biology, but that seems excessive.
Yeah. It does seem like, I mean, they're probably not discovering a lot of new things.
No, just coming up with new ways to organize taxonomy. So what you learned is probably outdated.
Uh-huh.
But like, your stuff is so interesting, Sarah, which is why I love these episodes, because I feel like I have an opportunity to learn and grow and branch out into some new academic areas. So
yeah.
I'm glad that you like being a perpetual student because we get to ride along with you.
Yeah.
Yes. School is basically a hobby now. It's a very expensive hobby.
There are worse.
One that I enjoy quite a bit.
So today is actually the wrap up from my master's program. I don't remember the last one I did, but I think I was still somewhere in like my second to last class. It's been a couple of months since I did one of these. So this is going to be the last one for Concordia Irvine.
Okay.
And the introduction to my...
Because I graduated!
Yes. Yeah, so this is transition from Concordia Irvine to Concordia Seminary.
Uh-huh.
Which I'm so excited about, but we'll get to that after I talk you through my capstone project that I loved. It was, I don't know if fun is the appropriate word for a very long research paper, literary review, but the content that I learned was very, 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 very interesting. So I have now graduated with my master's in organizational leadership. It's official in my email signature because Andy told me to put it in my email signature, so it's there. It's very exciting to actually be able to like mark the, I have a master's degree, when they ask you for like your level of education.
Yes.
So this is legit bucket list kind of thing. I've been wanting to get my master's for years and years. So I'm just,
we're so proud of you.
Yes. Tickle pink. Thanks, guys. Yeah. Yeah. So I got to go to Irvine in May and actually walk across the stage with my cohort, experience the whole graduation thing at Irvine. And Irvine does it a little bit differently. And this actually just started in COVID, but they do graduation. You walk through the campus and then you walk across the stage and then you're done. So like you don't sit in a big room for like 2 hours and watch everybody walk across the stage. You actually get to parade through campus and everyone like cheers you on, and there's cowbells.
It's a parade?
It's a parade for a few hours. Like, those poor professors stand there for a long time. But yeah, you get to, like, be with your friends. So my cohort was together, and we walked through campus together. Uh-huh. It's California, so the weather is, in general, it rained on our day.
One day it rained.
But yeah, it was a really cool thing to, like, put on my hood.
Interesting.
And my cap and my gown and, like, walk through campus and... Yeah, everyone celebrates
you. So, like, does your family, like, pick a spot along the parade route?
They walk with you.
They walk with you.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
They don't walk across the stage with you. They get pulled into
the
viewing
with you
gallery so they can take photos while you walk. But yeah, your family walks with you through the parade.
That's cool.
It is pretty cool. It's a very unique experience.
Huh.
I love it. And you know what? Kudos to them for fixing what has been a little bit problematic, and that is the length and the arduousness of the typical commencement ceremony. This sounds just fun and refreshing.
It was very fun. There was pomp and circumstance playing at some point along the parade. Yeah. You could hear it, so like, still get the vibes of
that's the best part anyway.
Got some flashbacks to playing pomp and circumstance for ages in high school when I was in the band. I think we've all been there. But yeah, so this is This is the nice bow on this chapter of Sarah Goes to School, because there will be another chapter starting actually this month. Oh, as of recording time, yeah, seminary starts officially in like 2 weeks. So
Have we talked about this yet?
Not yet. That's at the end of this.
Oh, but okay. All right. I won't spoil it.
Oh, she's spoiling it herself.
I know.
I'm so excited. Where's our big reveal? Dun, dun, dun.
It's coming in maybe 35 minutes. So first... We gotta wrap up.
We need closure.
I did my capstone project, which is the last part of the master's program at Concordia Irvine. I guess probably every master's program has some sort of like final to do. I don't know. So it was a literary review, which basically means you find a whole bunch of sources on your topic, and then you synthesize all of the stuff that you read into a really long paper. Basically, that was 7 weeks of my life. I wanted to do a really fun topic because I really love to learn and to research, but academic writing is very different from the kind of writing I get to do at work. Like I get to do like marketing and advertising writing, which is short and quippy, and like social media, which is a whole different vibe, and writing for podcasts, which is basically just writing how I talk. But academic writing is very different. And not exactly my favorite way
to
do it.
Tell me about it.
Right. So I really wanted to pick a topic that was going to be really, really fun. And so I chose to research how humor plays a role in the workplace. Because humor is fun. Mm-hmm. And specifically how humor in a team can create stronger organizational culture and increase a team's productivity, creativity, and stress management. This was so fun. If I ever decide to like actually do a PhD, which we'll see. I don't know about that part. But I'd probably take this research further and like how it really applies in church settings and include some problem solving and stuff. Because there's
humor
so much
at church?
More.
What?
I know, right? That's the point. I don't know. I just think it'd be really cool to like build some fun research about humor and creative problem solving. But
it would be.
That is not a thing that's in my realm of actually real possibilities right now. That's a
project for future Sarah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's filed away in my brain for if it's ever a thing I really want to do, it's there. But otherwise, yeah, I just get to talk about this to people now. So I feel like humor is really misunderstood or can be really misunderstood, or it has this reputation of being like silly, which it is, or immature, which is not always. I often feel like when I try to crack a joke in a situation, sometimes I feel like I'm being immature, and maybe it's bad timing on my part, and I actually am. Sometimes I read the room wrong, but like sometimes there is actually a time and a place to have humor and to use it intentionally in a way to actually make things better in a team or an organization. So my impetus for this was more than just that thought. That thought has come up in our team conversations too, our KFUO team. My love of humor, I'm going to tell you a bit of my origin story here. My love of humor goes like way back to my early years, as long as I can remember, like the newspaper funnies when we actually got newspapers and read them multiple days a week. I would always read the funnies, the comic section, and we'd cut out, as a family, we'd cut out the ones we loved and like put them up on our walls. My parents still have, and this is like my earliest memory of a comic, my parents still have this Baby Blues comic that's ancient. It's probably 30 plus years old at this point, up on their kitchen nook wall. And I asked my mom to like take a picture of it or send it to me so I could find it and put a picture of it into my TED talk for this capstone. And she's like, Sarah, we can barely even read it. It's so worn. So, like, we took what information we could, and Luther and I scoured the internet and we couldn't even find it. So it had to have existed, but it's not on the internet, so which is very, very concerning. But that's like my earliest memory of a cartoon. And then I've carried cartoons with me from that point on. So those I had in college, those little daily, you remember it? You get like daily calendars and you rip off the pages, and reliably about March or April, I would stop ripping off the pages and forget about the calendar. But I didn't want to throw them away because the comics were so funny. Do you guys remember My Life is Average? Is that like
vaguely,
a
vaguely?
It was a huge thing when I was in college. I don't know if it lasted very long, but it's just this really dry humor about like How My Life is Average. We used to spend hours reading these on the internet, and I would like put up, we would post them up on our dorm doors and like in our bathroom stalls. They were everywhere, but it was just all of this humor all around our college dorm. There's one comic from college that I still have with me on my cubicle wall. It's these dinosaurs, and they're looking over a body of water at the Ark, Noah's Ark in the distance, and it says, "Oh crap, was that today?" Mm-hmm. It's the comic that has lived with me.
Is that a Far Side comic?
I'm not sure.
Huh.
It might be.
Sounds like it. It's interesting what you say about those calendars, the like page a day comic calendars. I had the opposite problem from you with those, in that I would read all of the comics in like half an hour on the first day.
Just flip through them all.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I too enjoy comic strips.
Right? They're fun. I like them. So that was like the really deep personal inspiration for wanting to write about this. But there's also a lot of realization about humor that's happened in our team at KFUO and like our KFUO culture over the last couple of years, several years, really. I've kind of unintentionally, now intentionally, started comic walls in my cubicles to have a little comic relief. But also, Andy, my coffee hour co-host, we get a lot of feedback that people enjoy our program because of our witty banter. Like, we talk about serious stuff and we take our topics seriously, but we don't take ourselves very seriously. Mm-hmm. And that comes off to people as something that's warm and inviting and an approachable way to talk about topics in a appropriate manner, but like that. And then doing the ladies lounge, like we like to have fun and we like to talk and laugh about things. Mm-hmm. And so understanding that there's an intentionality that's happening here about bringing humor into spaces, I really wanted to know if there was more to this. Delight and humor actually became one of my core values during my master's program too, because over the last like 2 years, this realization that this is actually part of how I function as a leader using mm-hmm. humor. And so I wanted to see if there was anything to this or if I was just being silly all the time. That's mm-hmm. just, a thing, but not like a real leadership skill, organizational culture kind of thing. It turns out there is actually something to this. And this was very exciting for me. So before I get into like what I found, we got a crash course humor styles, because these make a difference in understanding how all of this functions. So researchers many years ago took previous research on humor and arranged 4 different humor styles for the humor styles questionnaire, which is a standard measurement for individual humor styles in research. You can take questionnaires to know what your humor style is. I haven't done it yet, but I want to because I love taking tests like that. So there's 4 styles are affiliative, self-enhancing, aggressive, and self-defeating. And so we got to play imagination for a hot second.
Okay.
So you can visualize this, because we love quadrants in how many of these podcasts mm-hmm. have we had quadrants of things. So we've got a box with quadrants.
Okay.
Along, going from left to right. So horizontally, mm-hmm. we go from negative to positive.
And then x-axis, negative to positive.
Correct. And y-axis, going from bottom to top, is internalized and relational. So,
okay. So
we have negative and positive going across, and internalized and relational from bottom to top. So those are our 4 quadrants. We're going to start in the upper right corner. So this is positive and relational.
Those are nice words.
Right? I know.
I like those.
So these, if you've noticed that some people are just like naturally funny and easygoing, and they like to make little jokes and banter about in conversation, and they just like make themselves really easy to be around with a cheerful, positive attitude. This is affiliative humor. So this one is really great in relationships. It can be kind of the glue that holds relationships together, because it's very outgoing, outward, and very positive. Okay, so that's affiliative. The bottom right corner is positive and internalized. So you might notice like there's people around who make light of inconsistencies in life. They try to see silver linings or have a humorous view of stress and challenging situations. So this is self-enhancing humor. It's really, really good for emotional regulation.
Mm.
So where affiliative humor is relational, self-enhancing tends to be more internal. And it can lower levels of depression and anxiety because of that person's ability to shift perspectives in a stressful situation. Mm-hmm. And that's really important in a couple of minutes.
So is this the one where you like can laugh at yourself and your situation?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I can see how that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then the top left corner, negative and relational. So these are the people who use sarcastic, biting humor. They like to ridicule people, put other people down. It's like, quote, all in good fun, which we know it's not. Oh, I'm just joking. Even though it was like really mean, that kind of humor. They might use inappropriate humor without really caring how it affects others. This is aggressive humor. And it generally tends to be a negative force in relationships, except in social situations where this is an accepted form of humor, which does happen in certain social circles. But in general, this one can have a very negative effect on relationships between people because it's just not very nice. And then the last one, the bottom left corner, negative and internalized. So these are people who will allow themselves to be laughed at when other people are ridiculing them. So like what Rachel, you said, you kind of chuckle at yourself or like you find your situation amusing. I think that's slightly different than this one. This is when you allow yourself to be the butt of jokes. You voluntarily put yourself down so other people will like you. It's self-defeating humor and it comes across or it can come across as funny. It also usually is used to avoid dealing with problems. So it has a very avoidant, there's a lot of avoidance happening here. Emotional neediness and avoidance tendencies, as well as depression and low levels of psychological well-being. So this is one that is very has a very negative effect because it's internalized on your own mental health. So like the exact opposite of the self-enhancing.
Is this one sort of synonymous with self-deprecating humor? Because I have heard that term a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So we've got our four humor styles. How does all of this play out in the workplace or in other teamwork, in the home, in board meetings at church? How does all this work out? So let's talk productivity first. So productivity in general, pretty important in organizations. We all come to work to do work, right? So it's important also in the home and any other team situation, wherever we're together in a group to get things done. So can using humor increase productivity? Yes. Through various studies, it seems like the answer is yes. More research does need to be done. This isn't a hugely researched area, but the studies that I found, it is something that can help. It is complicated because it relies on the relationship between the leader and the group and whether their humor styles align. So if a leader and a group have different humor styles, it can be a little tricky. Like if a leader has aggressive humor, but the group is really functioning more in like affiliative humor, there's going to be some weird dynamic going on there.
Right.
And whether the relationship is high trust. So whether everybody in the group, the leader and the people all trust each other. Because if there's not trust, then humor doesn't really happen. Because humor generally requires people to kind of understand what's happening and to maybe be a little bit vulnerable when you like crack a joke that may or may not land. So there's some complicating factors and variables, but in general, the research is that humor does increase productivity. Positive affect is the most strongly correlated happiness indicator with productivity. So one study showed that a 12% increase in productivity after participants were shown comedy clips, which I think is really cool. Other studies have shown similar results where happier people are more productive. It sounds kind of obvious, but they actually researched this, that if you have happier people, you will typically have, or it is possible to have higher productivity. These studies usually use humor to increase happiness, therefore increasing productivity. Another significant factor relating humor and productivity is persistence and momentum. This is where self-enhancing humor, that being able to like look on the bright side of things, comes into play. Studies have shown that higher self-enhancing humor increases persistence and momentum, which also increases productivity. Because of that perspective shifting ability, that helps people push through challenges in a way that other humor styles don't. So if you're having a challenge and you can chuckle about it or make light of it, it allows you to push through it easier than if you didn't have that ability. Also relevant to persistence is that humor doesn't exist in vacuums in teamwork. So the humor patterns between team members matters a great deal. But more research is needed here too, to see how that actually works. The links between productivity, creativity, and humor is play, which is another thing I want to research more. Heidi Gaiman has been doing a lot of research on play, and she and I were talking while I was doing this research, and boy, there's just so much here about play in the workplace and mental health, and there's so much, but I couldn't focus a lot on play, but a playful mindset increases productivity and creativity.
Isn't there something about that in Proverbs? I feel like this is something Solomon covered a while ago.
Well, that would be interesting.
Hang on.
So the most significant factor relating creativity to humor in this playful mindset is that humor breaks the bounds of normal and conventional answers. And I think this is probably the most interesting thing that I found doing this research. So humor helps facilitate outside the box thinking and consider the wild or unusual possibilities. So like when you're cracking jokes or when you're looking at comics, and it's funny because it breaks conventional rules or like what you would expect, and it's something completely different. So having that humorous mindset helps increase creativity. And self-enhancing humor again comes to play because of its ability to shift perspective and reframe a situation. So humor paves the way for the mind to create new ideas and find original solutions to problems. So this whole like creativity and problem solving thing and humor, that's really what I'm super interested in learning more about. Studies have shown that humor helps build a problem solving environment. And a study found that leaders' self-enhancing humor increased the team's productivity. So this is especially useful in a high-trust environment, again, where new ideas are accepted and praised. This is not the case in all teams. Sometimes when you're on a team and you bring a new idea up, it gets shot down because we don't do new things, you know? So having an environment where you know if you bring up a new idea, it's going to be at least discussed, even if at the end of the day, they're like, this may not be the best idea. It's at least a safe environment to bring up new ideas. So like with productivity, humor in teams involves the dynamic interactions happening in relationship. And so when a leader uses humor that breaks the rules, like witty banter, it's safe for the team to challenge old ways and step into new creative ideas. So
cool.
We've kind of started to embrace that too on our KFUO team. We've always had kind of a culture of joking around and having fun, but like we're actually stepping into it a little bit more intentionally too, of like actually cracking jokes to like break open new creativity. It's kind of fun. So an important point here is that creativity and humor can be an acquired skill, even if someone isn't, quote, naturally witty. So very interestingly, a study showed that increasing a person's capacity for humorous thinking can also increase their creative capacity. So even if you don't like think you're that funny, you can actually be taught to think humorously and creativity in your own way, which is fascinating.
Yeah. Now, there's hope for all of us.
There is hope for all of us. It's a skill to be honed just like anything else, right? Mm. So recalling back to the humor styles, affiliative, self-enhancing, aggressive, self-defeating, there's a lot of psychological kind of language in these. And this is where this makes a difference in stress management. So would you like to manage your stress better? I know I would.
Yes, I would.
Yes. The secret sauce might be to grow your capacity to have an affiliative and self-enhancing humor style, because you can actually do that. So if affiliative humor reduces stress because its ability to be relational glue. Social support is really crucial for mental health. We know this. And a study showed that affiliative humor was correlated with fewer physical symptoms of mental health. They showed that those with higher levels of self-enhancing humor had less perceived stress because they can see stressful events as less threatening. So even if two people are in the same kind of stressful situations, if you're able to have self-enhancing humor in that situation, you're going to perceive less stress than the other person who is unable to do that, which is crazy, but really cool.
Well, so here's where I found your proverb.
Yes.
Here's where it fits in. Proverbs 17:22. I'm going to read it in the King James Version because I like the wording. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones.
Yes, that.
So research proves that Proverbs is wise. There we go.
Yes. So on the flip side, self-defeating humor is linked with high perceived stress and physical health symptoms. And this is, I mean, this is something that if you've ever gone to therapy or done any kind of work in mental health, even on the surface, a lot of times you talk about like the self-talk and how you think about and address the situations that you're in. And a lot of this is the same kind of thing. If you're able to view a situation in a lighter way, or you're able to have positive self-talk instead of negative self-talk, a lot of that can really affect the perceived level of stress and the amount of stress that your body's going to physically feel, even if you can't actually remove yourself from that stress, because stress happens to everyone. But like, you're not going to get rid of all the stress in your life. Maybe some, but like not all of it. That's not a thing. But like how you react to it and how you are able to work through it can be very affected, positively affected, just by how you're able to react to it. So, and humor is part of that. Kind of cool. So the biggest point here is that self-enhancing humor and to a certain extent affiliative protect team members or people in general from stress because of A, being able to reframe situations, and B, being able to cope with stressful life events or high anxiety threats. Another study showed that an optimist who regularly uses affiliative and self-enhancing humor was especially protected against anxiety and depression. And even more exciting to me, there was a study that showed that training individuals with anxiety and depression in using positive rather than negative humor could strengthen their mental health and lessen symptoms of mental health disorder. So it can, and I'm not saying that like you can laugh all your stress away. Like that's not what I'm saying here, but like being able to shift your mindset can help your brain function better in those situations. And I've noticed this. I was doing a little experiment on myself because, you know, life is stressful. And I remember I was in the car one day. I don't remember where I was going, but I was having a lot of anxiety about something. And so Luther was driving. So I texted my team members. I was like, I am panicking about this. Please distract me with gifts. And they pulled through. Like they were just like loading me up with all of this humor. And I had to laugh at it because gifts are hilarious. And I felt so much better. So like understanding for me personally, like none of this is therapy. Okay. But for me personally, I know that if I know I'm having an anxious situation and I can get people to make me laugh, I will feel better. It might be temporary.
Yeah.
But like it lessens the physical feelings of anxiety that I'm having. Mm. So I don't know. It's really cool how the brain is wired. Like blows my mind. So with all of this new information, maybe you'll be inspired to think about humor in a different way. Being funny and witty and engaging in banter, I don't think it's just a cute thing to do. I mean, it is a cute thing to do, but I think it has so much more potential for having a real positive impact in the workplace and in your own relationships and mental health. And maybe you're inspired to see affiliative and self-enhancing humor in a way that can increase your own productivity, creativity, and stress management. And maybe even share some gifts because gifts are fun. So that is the like really elevator-ish, I don't even remember how many pages my paper was, version of my capstone on humor. So before I drum roll, big reveal, my next chapter, any thoughts?
I guess, yeah, I resonate with a lot of what you're saying. I think I sometimes find it challenging to... If you are in a job where creativity is not like a product, I feel like it can be harder to easily like intentionally incorporate humor into your, you know, your job, your work life without it feeling like, well, I'm taking a break, and breaks are good and worth it, but like, it's not necessarily like the humor is the point sometimes is what I hear you saying. And so when it's less directly tied to it, I feel like it's harder to incorporate it.
Yeah.
But it does match well with when people have a chance, like it aligns with the idea of, you know, having a meal with your colleagues periodically, because that just makes you like them more. You can't help it. You do. You ate together and you feel more warmly towards them because you ate something at the same time.
Yeah. So you didn't just eat. I've had dinner with you recently, Erin. Yeah. It was wonderful. And there was a lot of laughter happening at the table. Laughing about you know, some of the oddities of the menu and some of, I mean, just there was lots of, it was fun. Yeah.
Right.
And everybody that was around that table with us, laughing with us at the idea that somebody thought to put, what was it, sushi and watermelon together, which you ordered, by the way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But everyone who was around that table, I feel like they're not just casual acquaintances anymore.
Right.
That they will be friends.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it definitely has a value, but I feel like it's always this, unless creativity is the product, I feel like it's a lot harder to make the case of why it should be prioritized more highly.
Yeah. And that is why I want to take creativity further into problem solving, because because problem solving can be the end result of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot, I mean, across most industries, like, people have to solve problems all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if having humor in some form, I don't know what that would be in specific places, but having some sort of level of humor that helps to spark the creativity that causes you to be able to solve a problem better or faster or something, or work better as a team. Like, that's kind of what, that is part of the reason why I want to push creativity further. And because problem solving was only part of this, I kind of fell into it through the creativity stuff. But yes, I hear what you're saying. Because my,
yet, at the same time, at the same time, imagine yourself in a job that required no creativity and no problem solving. Let's say a factory. You're a factory worker.
Yeah.
And yet humor would still be able to play a role in helping ease the burden of the drudgery and create meaningful relationships with your coworkers. You might just be, you know, joking about how miserable your life is. But to paraphrase a Navy saying in Rachel friendly language, shared misery is less miserable.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, and humor is a way of transcending and coming together and finding, you know, some point of connection.
Yep.
And I think that even in a job that had zero creativity, zero problem solving, it would still make life better for the people doing that job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really wanted to dig in more into like cultural ways that this is different in different cultures. That was not even close to the scope of my paper. I did buy a book about what makes things funny in different cultures. But I mean, that layering that on top would be even more interesting. Mm-hmm.
Well, and
I
different think,
because I'm working
too.
In very Midwest culture where like people actually talk to each other. And I know that's not the case even in everywhere in America and certainly not everywhere in the world. So like interactions between people in my own little microcosm is very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that humor is very different in different places. So like,
especially when you look at, you know, that aggressive end of the scale, there are some cultures where that is much more culturally acceptable, normal than the Midwest nice culture, where if you come on with aggressive sarcasm, people are going to feel like you broke some sort of social contract.
Hmm.
Right. Yeah. This paper and my research was like a drop in the bucket of everything and all the different ways that it's affected in, I don't know, different industries and cultures and everything. But it's really sparked a lot of ideas and for me.
Well, so. I appreciate your reminder that there is a difference between helpful and unhelpful humor styles and that you can, by a little practice and a little like thoughtfulness, actually grow into very helpful humor styles. And by a little awareness and a little discipline, you can wean yourself off of those more negative humor styles, especially, you know, sarcasm that belittles people, except maybe if you're a dude in a bar with a bunch of other dudes. I feel like that aggressive humor works there.
Yeah.
Or that self-deprecating humor that you may put on as a sort of defense mechanism, but nobody's really that entertained by it. So, yeah, to be thinking, I'll keep your quadrant in my brain. Be thinking, how can I become better at the positive relational humor and sort of move away or stop myself when I find myself tempted to utter a sarcastic remark or some sort of self-deprecating throwaway line that isn't really going to make anybody feel happier.
Yeah.
So thank you. It's a great framework.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, that puts a bow on Irvine. What's next?
What is next?
Well, as of recording, I'm 2 weeks away from my orientation at the seminary for deaconess studies.
Okay.
And I will have a student insignia on a deaconess garb dress for my internship. And I am so excited. So I think I maybe talked about it a little bit along the way in this. I like dropped some things that I was like applying for seminary. I didn't talk about it a whole lot publicly, even on my social. I didn't really want to. And I'm not really entirely sure why, but like, this is something I've wanted to do for so long.
Uh-huh.
And it was such a way more intensive process than applying for Irvine. I mean, for some master's programs, you like fill out your application and they make sure you're legit and you can actually do decently well in grad school. And they're like, great, you're in. And seminary was not that. It was so much more. So the short backstory is that I've been toying with doing deaconess studies since like my sophomore year at Concordia Chicago, which at this point is like over 15 years ago.
Ooh.
Makes me feel a little weird inside. But it was one of those things that it just never worked out. But like every time I thought about doing it or I started researching it, there were just roadblocks, financial stuff, because it's not cheap. At least when I started looking, there was not as much of the financial assistance that there is now for seminary students. I couldn't decide on which seminary. And especially after I moved to St. Louis, I was like, maybe I should just go to St. Louis because I live here, but I also like Fort Wayne. I tried a third option. I tried really hard for a third option because at the time Concordia Chicago had a master's in religion. And I was like, maybe I can do the master's in religion and also get deaconess certified through Concordia Chicago. And then I don't have to pick a seminary. I'm not sure that that would have worked because by the time I was like inquiring about the program, they changed all of their programming and it didn't even exist anymore. So that wasn't an option. And I was like, well, I don't want to pick a seminary. How do I choose? And then Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis started their online program not that long ago. So that was part of it. If I did Fort Wayne, I'd have to do online. If I wanted to do St. Louis, I would have to go in person. And that seemed very difficult to work a full-time job and go in person. And so like there was just so many logistics just weren't working. But Concordia Seminary started their online program not that long ago. Seemed like a really good option, but stuff like still wasn't falling into place. Part of it was that personally, I couldn't really articulate why I wanted to do it. Like, right. I knew I wanted to, but I couldn't talk about it articulately. And that was bothering me. I was like, I feel like there's some more work that has to happen here so that I'm going there not just to like get a theological degree or like, oh, I'm going to be a deaconess because it's cool. Like, I felt like I needed to be able to talk about it a little bit better and like have very firm convictions on why I wanted to do it. Instead of just wanting to do it because I wanted to do it. That didn't seem like a good enough reason. I talked with my pastor about it and the wise man that he is, he was like, you know, Sarah, it's really okay if you just don't. Like, you don't have to be a deaconess.
Yeah.
It's really, like, you can serve the church without being a deaconess. It's like, oh, that's
a good reminder. Because Aaron and I both, like, we are non-certified. Do you have any certification, Aaron?
No.
Yeah, but we're professional church workers.
Training in global security.
Hey, that counts.
I have a certificate for that.
That's really important, though.
Yeah.
But if you want to serve the church, God will find ways, professionally and non-professionally. And honestly, the way ministry opportunities pay, they're all kind of all non-professional. If you want to serve in the church, God will open opportunities for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm sure I'm now convinced is part of the reason I ended up at KFUO because I wanted to be a church worker since I was in like third grade. I remember very distinctly thinking in grade school that I wanted to be a church worker, but I didn't know about deaconesses at that point and I couldn't be a pastor because I'm not a dude and I didn't want to be a teacher because classroom management terrifies me and I'm good at church music, but I'm like, I don't want to learn the organ. So I kind of just like let it go when I was this little kid. I was like, well.
Yeah.
So then I end up here and I'm like, oh, right. You can still like serve the church and not actually be a commissioned worker.
Yeah,
I get it now.
Lots of ways.
But this isn't to negate the value of deaconess education,
which is
significant. There have been many times when I've thought, just as you did, oh, this would be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So at that point, I
This was part of it. Also, my confirmation classes, like every theological training that I've had was for a degree, for a grade at some point in my life. Like my confirmation classes were graded. Mm-hmm. Theological classes in high school and college, all graded. So like I had this fear that I was going to get into seminary and it would again be learning to get the grade and not learning to actually understand. Right. And I did not want that to happen. And I was really afraid that that would happen again because I did not want to do that. So I was like, okay, after my little conversation with my pastor, I was like, okay, I will put this on the back burner. I will let it go. And if it's something that's meant to happen, I suppose I will know at some point, like the doors will open. Great. Cool. So that's when I ended up at Concordia Irvine because I was just randomly looking at theology classes and I found their leadership stuff.
Okay.
And God in his infinite wisdom, like I'm so thankful that that's the path that I took because I was able to get my master's, get the grades, but also learn how to like learn academically without worrying about the grade. That was that was a learning process for me because I am very concerned about grades and I was able to like shed that through the master's process. And I got my master's degree. So like the ODS online deaconess program at the seminary is not a master's program. You can continue on to get a master's, but it's certification. So like, I'm not doing this for the academic degree. And that's very freeing for me. Maybe not for everybody, but for me, that's very freeing. So the pieces finally all came together in my first class at Irvine because we did all of that internal work of like analyzing what you're good at and the skills and gifts that God has gifted you with and how you're already serving in the place where you're serving, which for me is here, KFUO, and like the ways I'm serving at church. So I did all that work of like analyzing and categorizing and thinking through how God's already using me. And I'm like, oh, it makes sense now. So like as soon as applications opened for fall 2025, so like April 2024, I applied for fall 2025.
Okay.
Which was early, but that gave me, I knew I wanted time. I did not want to have to rush through it because I was also trying to finish my master's. And there's entrance exams for the seminary, which were so scary. I passed them, but I crammed the books so hard. I think I'd spent every lunch hour reading about Old Testament for I don't know how many days. It was a lot. It was interesting. I loved it, but it was so much and it was so scary. But I did the exams. I got all the letters of recommendation and, you know, the doors just opened. And it's a weird feeling now that this is actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like the imposter syndrome is trying to set in again of like, Sarah, is this really... really what you're supposed to do, but
yes.
Like, yes, this is where I'm supposed to be. So I'm so excited. So the online program at Concordia Seminary is 4 years, at least a certification. So this series is going to go at least another 4 years.
All right, let's do it. Buckle up.
I know. It leads to certification as a deaconess. It's 16 classes. So 4 classes a year, 1 class at a time. And the part that I'm really, really excited about is that it's a co-current internship. So that means like when you do a church work, deaconess, a pastoral ministry, you've got some sort of internship or a vicarage for pastors. If the residential program, you do your years of study and then you do a year-long internship. But since this is a 4-year program and it's meant for people who are already doing some sort of ministry context work, the internship is co-current the whole time. So I'll have a 4-year internship alongside my classwork. And that's kind of my experience at Irvine was, I mean, it wasn't an actual internship, but like I have that framework now of like going to class, learning something, and then in the next couple of days, actually implementing it in my job. So I'm really excited that I'm hoping it kind of works in a similar way where like I have class, I talk with my mentor, Tiffany Maynor, who is here, amazing deaconess. You know, I have those experiences and then I'm immediately implementing them in some way in ministry work. So I'm really excited for that part of it. I get to do the bulk of my internship at KFUO, which is going to be so fun. We've got plans. Andy has so many plans for me.
So many plans.
And of course, the work that we do with Lutheran Ladies Lounge also. This segment and work in the Facebook group as well. We'll just see what happens. Who knows? And the one question that I keep getting is, well, are you leaving KFUO? No. At least I'm not planning on it. We'll see what God has in store for me in 4 years. My plan is to stay here. And this is increasing my theological abilities here and the work that I can do with theological content. So I'm just so, so excited. And I get to do deaconess internship stuff at my church too, to get a congregational experience also. Uh-huh. It all just seems like super duper surreal. But like, I've been praying for a long time when I was like really unsure of how all of these pieces were fitting together a few years ago, mm-hmm. when I was like really unsure, pre-Irvine, like really just unsure of what my path was. And I just kept praying. I was like, God, what are you forming me to do right now? Because I was like, my career path has been so weird. Like, I don't get it, but I get it now. At least part of it, maybe not the whole thing, but at least up until now, most of it makes sense until now. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm so excited and so humbled and so honored.
Sometimes God prepares you to do something different. And sometimes God prepares you to do what you're already doing. Just do it better.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. kind of how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, you have been talking about this for years.
Yes.
I know. Anyone who's been following this podcast is not surprised by this episode.
Nope. No.
This, and it makes perfect sense. Like, I think, yeah, you're gonna just drink in all of it and have so much fun making all the connections between what you're learning and how life plays out, that you know, the situations you find yourself in, you naturally draw those connections. So it's going to be really fun to go with you on this ride.
Yeah. I can't wait to learn.
I told someone at gathering I was going to seminary and he was like, it's about time.
I was like, well, that's really nice validation, actually.
Yep. It is about time.
Oh, man. So here's to the next chapter of Sarah Goes to School. I was thought about changing it to Sarah Goes to Seminary, but I don't really want to give people the wrong idea.
No, that's good. I like Sarah. Sarah Goes to School has such a nice ring to it.
Yeah. It'll be another 4 years and we'll get like theology and mercy work and what a deaconess mm-hmm. does kind of stuff. So
yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Well, ladies, if you have any comments or suggestions or wisdom, or maybe you want to be a deaconess too, we can talk about it. That would be fun. You can comment on our episode in the Lutheran Ladies Lounge Facebook group, on our Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can also find all of our podcasts at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge. Or on your favorite podcasting app, or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give.